Amen. Good morning, everybody. I am grateful and thankful for my worship team. Let's just celebrate them today. Thank you. Amen. They work hard. They're wonderful to work with. That's so much of the thing here. And so I just love all of their attitudes and hearts that are with me as we serve and lead you. And it's so enjoyable to get to do this and worship. And I want to tell you folks, we just love Dwayne and Senia. They mean so much to us. Like, they're like a gift to us. So I just think it's appropriate to tell you. Like, they're really, the day they walked in this door, they brought something, honestly. And everybody here will testify to that. And it was really neat. It was just a real sign to bring someone in, just, you know, just everything that they carry and bring. So we just love them, really, really sincerely appreciate them. So I want you to know that. Turn with me to Ephesians. It's kind of the key place that I'm speaking out of. And I just want another. Phyllis, did you end up announcing the men's retreat, the men's advance? You did not? Perfect. Men only. Hope I don't get any emails about that. Okay. The girls do occasionally try to crash our party, but it's September 8th and 9th this year, and it's a Friday, all-day Friday. If you can come, meetings start on Friday night at 7. Saturday morning, we have another worship meeting, and then Saturday night, we have our third meeting, and we eat a lot, play a lot, and so it's really neat, but this year, I've decided to go with the theme growing big people. And Bill Johnson talks about this when he was asked about growing his ministry and how big he wants. He's like, I'm not interested in growing my ministry big. I'm interested in growing big people. And so just taking that concept, like, yeah, that's really what in the ministry we should focus on, is just developing people and truly discipling people and not making it about numbers or how good it looks or big it looks or anything, but truly looking for quality and following the Spirit and really making true disciples, because actually that is the call. That is the Great Commission, is not just to make converts, but to make disciples. Disciples are followers of Jesus, so make people, develop people that are truly following, not a ministry, but a person, the person of Jesus Christ. So I just developed some thoughts and keys in this as I've actually did it quite a while back about growing big people. And just to give you all the juices, and you women can be praying about this too, instead of giving three talks about that or lessons or messages, we're going to hit key elements that I think that it takes, believe that it takes, and know that it takes to grow big in the Lord, grow big internally. And I'm going to introduce those subjects, and then I'm going to more have talking points and interaction over all of those, and have the different guys contributing to the subjects about growing our personal life and growing our continued development and training and getting ministered to and going out. So there are just a lot of elements. So be praying for it. But that's just to kind of let you guys know. So it's going to be a real neat time. It always is good. It's always neat. That's what's happening with our men's retreat. So there we go. Ephesians chapter 6. Verse 10, I felt to speak about putting on the whole armor of God. And in this passage, starting in verse 10, we start to get this instruction about a warning. It's like, first, the admonition or the exhortation, put on the whole armor, the whole armor, all of it, not just the parts that look cool, put it all on. You know, little kids are like, I don't need that on. I don't need my helmet to ride my bike. Put it on. You know, I don't need the shin guards. Older men are actually worse about this than children. So they give us more grief, don't they? Put on your stuff. Put on your armor. Wear your safety glasses, you know. Chris Brothers, my brother-in-law, is always working commercial construction. And there's more energy given to trying to keep your men safe and not violating OSHA laws than it is getting work done. So, you know, it's kind of crazy right now. However, there's a reason for all the rules, right? They're usually, hopefully, there are good reasons for all the stuff. So we get this admonition from a father who loves his people, his churches. Paul is a father of the faith, an apostle. That's a fancy word, but he birthed, he watched over, he cared for the souls and groups of souls, and he didn't get the unlimited access we have to one another or to his disciples. When he wrote a letter, it was a big deal. Who knows how long it took to get the letter there? It was not email. You know, now we call the U.S. Postal Service snail mail. That's almost an antique term now, you know. And there's all this instant everything. But back in the day, it took time. Lots of time. People suffered and died and at great expense sometimes just to send a letter, just to send a message. So there were people that they would literally, their young disciples, they'd literally give them charge of a letter. Here's the letter for this church in Ephesus. I want you to deliver this. You're the courier of the word of the Lord from a father, from a spiritual father, to a group of people. It was precious cargo. I know we've lost our value for all that. We actually take a moment and realize how important that was. We don't get it normally, so we've got to stop and go, that was a big deal. Like, this is, have you ever waited for a communication from someone that matters to you? Now we're inundated. That's why I say we've lost this, because we're inundated with advertisements and emails. I mean, you get an email address and it's like you've got to categorize it just so you're not bombarded by all the spam and the junk and the advertisements and the social stuff and blah, blah, blah. And there's a little bit of important information in there, and a lot of it is a lot of blah, 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 isn't it? Get a telephone number. And yeah, not everybody that rings you is your friend, right? You know, then they got a hold of our cell phone numbers. That all happened to everybody just a few months back. And now this inundation of calls from all over the place. So advertisements. So to carry a letter, to receive a letter from a father, it was a big deal. And so he gives this, and we have to understand these instructions, they're heartfelt. He gives us instructions. It's not blah, blah, blah. We'll read our Bible and go, I don't understand it. It's because you don't have any concept for what it is. If that's true, boy, you're missing it. If I read instructions for putting something together that I don't have, if I don't have a new charcoal grill to put together and I get the instructions, it's like, whatever, right? You don't sit around reading manuals that don't have anything to do with what you're making, building, make, right? Who likes to read through a cookbook when you're not cooking? I know some of you are kind of weird, but normal people. It all becomes relevant when you get in the game. When you're on the walk, when you have the need, when you have the question, when you're looking for answers, and you go, man, how do I put this thing together? Oh, the manual. Or call somebody, you know. Watch a YouTube video. Get instructions so we watch and we do. So he begins in Ephesians chapter 6. I should turn there since I'm preaching out of it. Why not? I'm getting closer, closer, closer. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God. So there's an exhortation. First of all, out of the gate, be strong. Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. So we immediately get key language here. We're going to come back to this. Catch that word, stand. stand against. So that is the, if I was better at language, I could tell you what kind of word that is, but it's a verb, of course, but stand, it's like the action of standing. And so that's the very important word in this. Verse 12, we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness, against the against spiritual hosts of wickedness in heavenly places. And just to go over my notes that I have somewhere here. Here they are. To get those in common terms for us and define the words that are used to define principalities, powers, rulers of darkness, spiritual wickedness, are the spirit of intimidation. And what we really want to, the take home from this is, it's not people, it's these principalities. They may be functioning through people. There's usually flesh and blood that you see. However, it's not about people. It's not about people. It's not about people. It's about powers and about principalities. It's not about people. It may be in people. It may be in you. Oh, pastor, not me. Not here. Not in church. Never. I wouldn't. How could you? Principalities is intimidation. There's this whole spirit of intimidation. I don't feel good being there. I don't like the atmosphere. I don't feel comfortable there. It's because there's intimidation, and you encounter that. So it's not the end of the story when you encounter certain things. Then you put a name and a face on it, and you're in trouble. Then you start fighting people. I hate Aunt Susie. She takes over. Or so-and-so comes around. I don't feel free to speak. So intimidation. Identify the spirit that's behind it. Powers. The fear to speak. The fear to have a voice. All the time, you'll hear this. Well, it doesn't matter what I say. Or I don't have a right to speak. I'm not a relative. I don't have enough seniority. I don't this, I don't that. I'm not so and so, so it doesn't matter what I say. You hear it all the time. Out of the workplace, out of the school system, out of the church, you know, this thing. What is that? There's a principality behind it. There's a power behind it. It's the fear to speak. And so that's the spirit. There's truly a spirit that just is present over a people, over a person, in an area, and it causes you to be afraid to speak up. You know that fear to tell the truth? I mean, speak the truth when it's relevant. That fear to stick up for something that you know is, you know, come against something that you know is wrong. To speak out against abortion, to speak out against whatever is in our culture or society. That fear to speak about that, there's a principality there that's going, it looks like it's a person, but it's going, don't you dare say that. Don't you dare. I'll come and get you if you say anything. Your life's going to get miserable if you speak. Be quiet. Go back to your yard and stay out of this. This isn't yours. There's a spirit behind that. So identify the spirit. Identify the spirit. The rulers of darkness, manipulation. Wow. Our culture is so full of manipulation. It's every place. Again, we always identify people, but it's not people. It's a power. It's a thing in the atmosphere, manipulation. And you know what? If you're not careful, you'll use it to get out of it. Oh, you're going to manipulate me? Well, I'll manipulate you first. Great. Heaven's gone, oh boy. Pastor, stop that, you know? I mean, honestly. Leaders lean to this when everything else is failing. I mean, we don't have to go outside of these walls to have these things show up, right? So we want to watch over that. We want to identify this because you don't want to function in that. As tempted as you will be, guaranteed. Don't function in that. Raising your children, guess what you'll go to sooner or later? If you haven't, you are the most perfect person. Perfect, perfect parent. You never manipulate your kids. Wow. Let me shake your hand. Sooner or later, you pull the card out, you know. where instead of giving instruction and letting them make choices and then letting them suffer the consequences of those choices, you manipulate. It's nasty. I was under that in my Christian household. When my mother got desperate enough, she pulled this card out. Honestly, it wasn't cool. I would have rather done what was wrong at the time. I mean this sincerely. I would have rather done what was wrong and let the Spirit convict my heart, because he would have, or made a mistake, than for her to pull that card out. And it got very serious, and I won't go into the details. And then you start to behave because you're under manipulation, and you wonder why you're not connected to the Lord. You wonder why you're disconnected and you're angry and you're frustrated. If you come under this, and if you function in it, you find yourself irritable, angry. So really, it's really important to catch and pay attention to. And then spiritual wickedness in high places is the spirit of malice. Just want to punish people. You just want to hurt people. Pretty big in the whole world, isn't it? The spirit of malice comes, and it's not about logic. It's about just wanting to do harm. We'll do it with our words, but we're watching in a world where they're doing it with guns and knives and spears and bombs and whatever, right? And what all of that is the spirit of malice, the intent to do harm just because. And then add some religion to that, and that's really the ugliest. There's no war like a spiritual war, or not. I'm not going to call it spiritual because it's not spiritual. It's very earthly. But when religious factions go to war, those are some of the nastiest stinking wars that have been on the planet. Wow. Isn't that crazy? They're the worst wars, the religious wars, the wars that are over quote-unquote faith, and no one is spiritual in that. They're principalities. They're functioning, they're working, so we want to identify them. We don't want to be a part of them. Now, I took time. I'm going to, because I want to take time. I don't want to move too fast because this stuff's too important. I think we're always moving too fast. I referred to, and I had these guys bring up this awesome replica of the Ark. It's so cool to have this because it's such a lesson in it. It's such a good illustration. And I think you folks might have been gone the week I shared about this, because I picked right up where Phyllis left off, and it's been so neat to do that. This may be 3 weeks back. And when this starts out, it's just a wooden box. How many have a wooden box at your house? Eventually, sooner or later, we're going to all end up in a wooden box. It might be decorated a little better than, you know, some people might have more decorated and colorful wooden boxes than others, but it's all pretty much the same, you know? So a wooden box is a wooden box. Your dog may live in a wooden box with a hole in it, you know? I mean, in itself, it's just a wooden box. You might have a wooden box that you stand on. You might have a decoration that's a wooden box. That's a crate. You have some books in it, some knickknacks. But under the instruction of the Lord and the gold plating and the inside and the out and all the elements and all the meanings that are here and the cherubim over it and the elements that are inside, in the end, it carried the presence for the children of Israel, represented the presence. And this becomes a perfect picture of who and what each of you are to be. To carry the presence. And so it's in 1 Samuel 5, and I'll just refer to it so we can keep moving through this. 1 Samuel 5, where the ark gets stolen and taken, and the god Dagon, where they park the ark, falls over the next morning, like the idol, boom, down. So they set him back up. Some gods need some help. Set him back up. They leave him in there for the night, and guess what they find the next morning? He's not only fallen over, but he lost his head, his hands, and his feet. So he was in worse shape. And all the ark did was just be there. Doing what? Just carrying the presence. At one point later, when Israel recovered the ark, they peeked inside the lid. And I believe the number was 50,600. 50,070. Now 5,000, 50,000, 70 died because they disobeyed, disregarded this, and they looked at the opened up the presence without the covering of the blood. Thank you, Jesus. That's not because God's mean. That's because that's how radiant he is. That's how powerful he is. And if you don't get it, get over it. Because I'm tired of trying to apologize for God and his holiness. He's holy. He's sovereign. He's scary. I love him. I feel safe when I'm close, but I feel fearful when I'm screwing around, when I'm messing around with him. Do not talk bad to me about Jesus or the Father or the Holy Spirit, and don't talk bad to me about my president. I'll tolerate a lot of other stuff. I don't want to hear it. You don't know what you're talking about. Let God be God. He is what he is. He's no tame lion. He's out of control. But he defines himself, and he's a God of love. In behind all of that scary radioactive radiance that he has, he loves us deeply. He wants to be close to you, you little drowned cat in the deep ditch. Your pathetic kitten on your best day. He wants to be close. Now, in the Ephesians account here, you'll find, and we're going to get back to the armor, hit a couple more of the elements, but Ephesians, I lost it again, is this active word of standing keeps showing up. And you say fight to us and do battle to us and put on warfare garments to us, and we're like, we visualize, you know, we're getting out guns and swords and whatever, we're going to go kill something. And we've all had those days when we just want to go kill something. It's just in our blood. I'm going to, you know. It's not just me, right? Okay, so feel that intensity, and then you bring that into your spirituality. It's no good. Don't do that. If you're in trouble with the devil, don't go to court with him. Send the advocate. It's the 1 John or 1 Peter. Like, Jesus is your advocate, and the prosecuting attorney is better than you. You cannot win your case, so just shut up and send somebody. Send Jesus. Let him argue your case. And the best thing you can do is get on the witness stand and say, yep, I'm guilty. But Jesus over there is defending my case. So I'm going to go sit down beside him and be quiet and let him talk for me. He's the guy. So then we get confident. We're like, I can fight this fight. And we're told, you know, you don't wrestle against flesh and blood. You wrestle against principalities. We think that's a license to be at war with everything. And I'm going to tell you today, I could be wrong because I'm just here on Bethesda Road, but I think it's a wrong direction. I watch people that get all cranked up about the fight, and they usually lose. And we've watched this many, many years with people that get into spiritual warfare. And even though everything's good and they have scripture and they're whatever, they get consumed with the warfare and they end up getting pulled in. They end up getting obsessed with the warfare. They end up becoming more about fighting demons than loving Jesus, and your goose is cooked. And the devil loves a good fight. He doesn't mind. Bring it on. Get angry. Come on. Go ahead. Take a swat at me. You got to learn how to fight, and we fight not the way that we think we should fight. This isn't Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. This is, you know, this is spiritual. This is warfare according to the King. And so let's take a moment. I felt drawn to Gideon today, Joshua chapter 7. And interesting what happens. I was just reminded of this as I was going back over. I'm like, oh, yeah, Gideon, there's Gideon. And they have an enemy. And you know that you've got an enemy that wants to kill you and take over your land and steal your stuff. And what's the first question you ask? How many of us are there? And how many of them are there? Are there more of us than there are of them? That's the question.
Judges.
That's why it's not there. Gave you the wrong address. Judges 7. Try that. Does that look like a better address? Because if I'd have actually looked at my Bible, I would have noticed that it wasn't right. Here it is. Okay. Yes. Caption at the beginning of the chapter, Gideon's valiant man. Okay. So God is like, Gideon, I'm sorry, but this isn't going to work. Why? We need everybody we can get, right? Don't you do that? Let's recruit. We've got something to do, and we go into our mode of recruiting people. We do all kinds of things, and the first thing, we got to get people on board. It's a great networking scheme, like it's how things work in our culture. Let's get a lot of people on board. I'm just going to say that may not be, that's not wrong if the Spirit tells you, but be careful. That's not how things work in the kingdom. I've tried to come up with a lot of those things, honestly. It's like, doesn't go anywhere when I shoot the gun. You ever have a bullet roll out the barrel and you go, that was a dud. You get all cranked up and you're convinced yourself and everybody this is the way to go, and then it just drops to the ground and then you're mad at people. Like, don't just save yourself the time. Go, I must be not following the Spirit. That's what's going on here. I better go back, you know, and pray. Find out what Jesus wants me to do, because that didn't work. It was a great idea. It doesn't work. So you want to get back to what's the Lord saying. And the Lord says to Gideon, you got too many people. You sure? It doesn't feel like too many. Nope, it's too many. Tell everybody that's afraid and nervous about going to war, go home. So a couple of them, he goes, okay, everybody that's really afraid of this, like, you're better off just leaving. They pack up. So some of them left, but God's like, no, that's not going to work. Still too many. What? And he takes them to, here, you call them together. You do what I tell you to do. He has them go drink water. How interesting. And I'll tell you, by watching them how they drink water, I'll tell you who to keep and who to send home. It's not about logic. It's just the Lord's giving instructions. This is how we do warfare. This is how we're going to fight this fight. You're going to listen to me from the beginning to the end, and I guarantee it won't make any sense to you. Are we good? Are we good, church? I guarantee it. You're not going to like it. It's going to make you really uncomfortable. Are you still in? When you tell the relatives, they're going to be like, what the heck are you doing? Have them drink. Okay, everybody, go down and get a drink at the river, the lake, whatever the water source is. They go down. The Lord says, in the end, anybody that gets down on their knees and drinks, just send them home. There wasn't anything wrong with that. But the ones that reach down and pick up water and drink like this, like, it is kind of interesting, isn't it? Because when you get down on your knees, you're vulnerable to whatever, but if you get down, it showed the diligence to stay in a place of, I'm still ready, you know? But the Lord doesn't say that. That's just me looking at that going, that's interesting. But anyways. And there only ended up being about 300 of them. And we don't know what that 300 looked like. They may have been all the skinny guys. They may have been the guys that showed up with a stick instead of an arrow. And you're like, oh, all my bow guys, they all just left. Like, you sure, Lord? This is killing me. Do I have to tell them to go home? Yep, tell them to go. Turns around, looks at his 300. We don't know what that 300 looked like. It might have been like, oh, man, wow. Did you ever think of that? And then the next instruction for the battle. Three things that I would not take to war. Even though I'm not a fighter, I still would not choose these. I'd be looking for a big gun, a big stick, and a cell phone, I don't know, a transporter, transport me out, Scotty, you know. And it's a pitcher, like a crock that holds water, and a torch, and they had some horns, some trumpets. Not my weapon of choice. None of them. And they go, they encircle the camp of the enemy. You understand when you encircle the camp of a big enemy and you don't have any weapons, all you're going to do, when's the last time you took down a beehive? That can you have, you want to see that it shoots, you know, 22 feet. I want the one that goes 35 feet. You can shoot this at the wasp, the hornet nest, from out there in the middle of the yard. That's the one I want. Because we all know, you screw around with that thing before you get those bees disoriented, and they're going to come after you, sting you in the face. Fiery darts, huh? Fiery darts. Huh. I think there's something in the armor about fiery darts. Follow the instructions of the Lord. It tells them, take their pitcher, a torch in it, at the right time. They're to take up their trumpets. They're to smash the pitcher so the torch is exposed, because that must have been how they hid the flame. And they're to blow their horns and to scream insanely, you know, for Gideon, for the Lord, whatever, you know. Nothing is in the battle how to kill the enemy manual. So have I made my point now? And you can read it for yourself right down through. And they had a great victory. The enemy scattered. They didn't even have to fight hard. It just, boom, that's spiritual warfare. You don't fight and wrestle against flesh and blood, and you don't fight and wrestle like flesh and blood. The weapons of our warfare are powerful. They're as the Spirit leads, and that thing that is very ridiculous to you will be the thing that will take out the enemy. Follow the instructions, hear what the Lord's saying, and do the thing. And so what Gideon's guys did do is they stood. They did a lot of standing. So in Ephesians chapter, back to Ephesians 6, verse 12, we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, powers, against rulers of darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in heavenly places. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all to stand, stand therefore, having girded your waist. So it's about standing. You see, this word keeps showing up. Stand, 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 stand. So find your spot, get your stuff on, and stand, stand. You need to learn how to stand. There's no sword training in this. Don't even have to turn on the music. I mean, at least you need some good go kill something music, right? We will, you know, something that makes you feel like, you know, conquering something. But instead, put this armor on. It's not optional. You need to put the armor on. And then stand. Be vigilant. Keep showing up. Stand. Standing, Lord. Still standing. Waiting, listening to do what you tell me to do. So we looked last week, we began to look at the armor. Having put on, gird your loins with truth. And as I looked at this, I wanted to stay, like, not spiritual over the top, but I wanted to just stay in a very practical way, because I believe as Paul gave this and wrote this letter, he just wanted to give them a visual so that they would get understanding. It's not that it was deep and difficult. It was like, I want you to picture this. Picture armor and the elements of armor. That's all I want you to do. Just get a visual of that and understand this is that, like that. I want you to look at this natural thing so that you get a revelation about this spiritual thing. That's simple. We can all do that, okay? And so gird your loins with truth. I mean, real in a real practical way. I put on my pants, man, you know? Like, if I'm just, you know, running around the house in my underwear, I'm not ready to go anywhere. I'm not, you know, it's like, that's the way I sleep. That's not the way I stand. It's not the way I show up for life, hopefully. Gird your loins, put on this thing. No warrior, whatever that means. Like, we don't even have a good picture of that, but it was evidently part of the armor you did not leave home without. If you're going out to battle, and so your buddy go, hey, man, where's your loin stuff, you know? You got to protect that. You can't be going out, you know? You got to get that covered, protected, right? Let's just be real, like it's supposed to visually. You're not going to band, you're going to play football. Get your stuff on, protect yourself. And the element, he goes, that's truth. When you put on truth, when you become a person, I want to challenge you again. Choose, because here's what's so about deception. You don't know you're deceived when you're deceived. Like, we're all like, oh, no, I don't want to be deceived. I don't believe in that stuff. Well, of course you don't. But that's the whole element of it. You are and you don't know it. Well, I'm not deceived. You sure? Well, yeah. So make a conscious choice. I challenge you. What's the truth in your life? Do you understand? You're going to spend all of your life believing something that's not true about somebody. Wow. How tragic. Spend all of your life believing something to be true about a person. Let's just using that as an example. And you're wrong. But I'll tell you, if you believe it, everything comes through that grid, right? Everything comes through that lens. No, you're a bad person. I see you through my bad person lenses. And you're bad, bad, bad. Stop trusting in your flesh. And make a decision, make a choice. I want to know the truth, Lord. I think I know the truth, but I may not know the truth. Because I can be deceived. I can be wrong. I can be so certain of something, and maybe I'm good and maybe I'm not. I want the truth. I want to walk in the truth. I want to know the truth. I want to speak the truth. The truth will do what? It'll set you free. And Paul's saying to his disciples, walk in truth, people. This is part of your armor. Walk in truth. Choose truth. Choose to seek truth. Choose to choose truth. It's an active thing. Just because everybody around you just goes along with things doesn't mean you should or could or can. Like, it's illegal. And the church should be champions for going after the truth. And that takes humility. That takes laying down this stuff you're so certain about. I'm old enough now to know I've been wrong about a few things. I've got the evidence. I've got the proof. Yep, I was wrong. What I thought was wrong. I was so sure I was wrong. So I'm a little, as I get older, I'm a little less likely to go, oh yeah, I know what that is, you know. You start to get into a discussion with someone that turns into an argument. You know, I didn't, you know. And I go, I don't think I did, but I may have. I don't think I said that, but wow, if I did say that, I'm sorry, that was wrong. Erase that. I don't remember saying that or doing that, but if I did, I don't know, because I have been wrong. It's just this place of humility where you stop just being so sure and you say, I want the truth. Put that on every day. We choose. Put it on and don't take it off. We were talking about that. Like, it's not about putting your armor on every day. It's about put it on and don't take it off. Go to bed with it. I give you permission. Because from the moment you wake up, how many of you, game's on, your mind's rolling. You wake up and boom. Life and imaginations and things you're worried about, it's all right there. How did it find me so fast under the covers? How did that thing know I was waking up? Because, wow, I didn't even get to go, oh, and I'm like, boom, hit. So just don't take your armor off. Go to bed with your clothes on. Gird your loins with truth, your waist with truth, having put on the breastplate of righteousness. And I would look at this and I always think, well, this is about being righteous. It's not about being righteous. It's about having righteousness on me, a righteousness that's better than on my best day. It's very important to get this. Put on Jesus. And I keep referring to our little ones coming in here. Sometimes Maria lets, you know, our kids dress up like whatever at church. At church, why would you come looking like a Ninja Turtle or Spider-Man or whatever? It's church. And I'm watching this going, come on, you know. Mom, dad, you know. I said to Maria the other day, are you dressing your children or are you decorating them? The little one comes. Did you see her? Was it last week or whatever? She has these little things around her feet, bare feet, with this little thing and a little flower on top. I'm like, what is that? That's not shoes. That's decorations. You're decorating your child. Come on. Anyways, I'm watching. I'm looking. I think it was watching Josiah. It could have been any of them. And all of a sudden, I'm like, that's putting on Christ. That's the example of putting on Christ. You put on something. You get into character. We need to put on Christ. I'm back to this, like, I need to stop thinking about me and start thinking about him. I want my meditation to be on his benefits and on his and what he's given me, and stop trying to feel better. It's not working anyways. About myself, trying to find something good. Give it up. But he is good. Are you spending more time meditating on his promises and his goodness, or are you spending more time worrying about your, well, if you're good, like, at least that you got an up on me? If you can just go to bed at night and go, man, I'm good. I was good today. I was awesome all day long. I was awesome with my kids. I was awesome with my spouse. I was a great pastor from the beginning of the day to the end of the day. And I built something and turned out nice. I mean, you know, I got it all going. I can just go to sleep. Whoo, baby. You know, wake up in the morning. I'm good. Wow. If you're like that, then you probably need help, but I don't know if we should even disturb you. I'm choosing to make my meditation about, I have his righteousness by faith. I put that on. Put on Christ. This is cool. You go, yeah, I'm not too, don't worry about it. Just put that thing on. I guarantee you our kids don't decide how they feel about themselves before they put their Superman outfit on. Matter of fact, here's the truth. Right, Grandpa, Grandma? They put it on so they can feel good. Dress up, put on the Darth Vader or whatever. I'm powerful because I'm dressed like powerful. I'm Darth Vader. I'm intimidating, you know. Oh, Luke, I'm not, you know. Luke, it's a lie. I'm not your father. Whatever. I'm a big shot now. I've got a late lightsaber. It's just a little LED light with, you know, that lights up. It's all plastic, but, you know. How about that? put on the breastplate of righteousness so you feel good. Put on Christ, it'll change how you feel. Don't try to feel better without putting that on. So if you're feeling kind of worthless in yourself, you're in a great place. That's good. You're just butt naked. Get dressed. Right? That's good. I like that. I'm encouraging myself right now. Put it on, man. Put on Jesus. He's good. Put on that right. That's what dress up. Paul's like, put on the breastplate of right. Put on righteousness. Because the rest of the instruction is, your righteousness is not that great. If that's all you got on, Paul says, I had all my own righteousness. I thought I was amazing. I was killing Christians and think I was doing a great job. Now, that's a bad day when you wake up and go, that wasn't right. You know, that light experience on the road? Who are you? I'm Jesus, who you're persecuting. Oh, crap. Put on righteousness. Put it on. Put it on. Put it on. Having your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel. I introduced this last week. I keep thinking about it. I'm like, this is so cool. Do you feel like going anywhere until you get your shoes on? I mean, maybe some of you walk around barefoot, pregnant, whatever, you know. But me, I don't feel like moving out of the house till I got my shoes on. Then everything changes. Sometimes I'm like, oh, I don't want to get started on that. I don't want to do this. But I've learned this. When I put my shoes on, I just change how I feel. I don't know why my shoes matter, but they do. I get that on. I actually get dressed for the day. Get my shoes on. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm good. I'm ready to go. It just changes. And so Paul says, you know how important it is to shod your feet? Like you need something a little bit more than sandals because you're going to war today. Flip-flops, I'm not going to get it. You need something more. Shod your feet. It was probably the terminology for put on a pair of shoes. Put on something that's going to protect your feet and give you some support. Because today you're not going to lounge around in the chair. You've got to battle. You've got to stand. Like, you got to stand. Got to plant your feet and stand today. Can't be casual. And you shod your feet, and I always stumbled over that word, the preparation of the gospel of peace. Like, oh, whatever. I don't get it. Like, I mean, you can read the commentaries and still not get it, right? I'm not sure they got it. After I read the commentary, I'm like, wow, you're complicated, but I don't think you got anything that I don't know. You know, like, nah. But I began to just let me see, like, fresh lenses what this is. And I realized preparation, that word preparation shows up. It's about preparing, having, and the gospel is the good news. And the good news is my story. My part in the good news is that I get to tell how I'm a witness. I get to tell my story, how the Lord impacted. How many of you, have you prepared your story? Do you have your story prepared? Have you looked at your story? Have you slowed down enough? How the heck did you get here? Because this wasn't on the way to any place. You understand that. Dwayne and Senior, how'd you end up coming from California to Steubenville? How'd you end up here? This is not really on the way. It's kind of in between, but it thought, how'd you end up here? Like, well, we looked up such and such. But why did you look up that website? Why did you look up that information? There's a purpose to all the story, the whole story. It matters. It's your story. How did you get here? How did you encounter the Lord? Have you prepared your story? Do you know your story? Can you summarize your story? Do you have a story? You need one. You all need your own story. It doesn't have to look like his. It doesn't have to look like hers. It doesn't have to look like anybody else's. This is your story. How did the Lord encounter you? How did he draw you? I have my story. I know that at every increment of my life, what kept me going. I know why I believe in God. It may not mean anything to you, but I know why I believe. I know how he revealed himself to me. I know the call I felt, the feelings I felt. I know the drawing I felt. I know I began to believe. That's all I know. But I only have to tell my story. You may be totally unimpressed with my story. Okay. Can we all be okay with that? Nobody else may be impressed with your story. Just so it's yours. And you put that preparation on. Put it on. When you put it on, you're going to feel like going somewhere. I like this. I'm going to keep talking about this. When you get your story and you're comfortable with your story, how he's called, the preparation of the gospel coming to you, the good news coming to you, the relationship you have with Jesus, and how you came through your and the more of real conflict and difficulty in it, the better the story is. Because he's so patient. Maybe it took you 60 years to come to Jesus. That's a good story. Because we still have a lot of 60-year-olds around that haven't encountered yet. And they need someone to come along and go, oh, yeah, I'm just like you. And it wasn't until last year I started to really believe. I finally saw some real stuff. The Lord orchestrated some things in my life that I ended up right at the right place, and I didn't know it was him. I believe the Lord's leading you in your life all through your life. Not just because you had it all together at 8 years old. Because he's so patient and he just wants to be close to you. You go, oh, my life's a screwed up mess. That doesn't matter much to Jesus. It's like, oh, I fix that stuff all the time. If someone asks me to fix something or build something in my little construction world, there's some things I go, whoa, you know. But there are other things, and they're like, I don't know how you fix that. I got that. I'm good. Because I have experience. I know I can, even if I can't tell you how I'm going to do it, I just know I will. There are things I know in that realm. And so just because your life's a mess, do you understand your big mess is really nothing for Jesus? Somebody else's big mess. We got to get this. Like, some people are really like in a hot mess. It's several levels of hot mess. And we're like, oh boy, I don't know how that's ever going to be like. You're kind of, wow, I don't know if there's any hope for you. But you're not, you're Jesus, for him, everything is possible. All things. So all you have to do, all you and I, put your shoes on, put your story on, get clear about why, what, where. Just do that. That's really huge. It's really huge.